Good afternoon. It's almost 3 p.m. in the capital city of Juneau, Alaska. It's time for another edition of A Juneau Afternoon. I'm Ken Fix. I'll be your host for today. On the show, we'll be talking with Cheryl Roberts about November's 20th annual Bald Eagle Festival in Haines. Dave Pusich will be here to highlight the City and Borough of Juneau adult and youth sports programs. We'll talk with Deborah Corker about this Saturday's Alaska Health Fair at the Nugget Mall. And Thunder Mountain High School drama coach Barbara Jo Mayer will be here to preview the Thunder Mountain High School fall production, The Tale of a West Texas Marsupial Girl. These guests, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more for Tuesday, October 7th, 2014. Stay tuned. National Native News is up first.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Alaska Division of Elections needs to provide poll workers in three remote regions of the state with election materials and voting information translated into Yupik or Gwich'in. As KUAC's Emily Schwing reports, translators are hard at work but are finding the process challenging.
As required by Alaska Statute 1545.
Since early summer, Alan Hayden has been working with the Alaska Division of Elections to translate election materials into the Athabaskan language, Gwich'in.
1545090A4
Hayden says the work is both tedious and challenging.
Yeah, it is. Some of it is very technical language, legal jargon.
Hayden is working with Marilyn Savage. She says the hardest part is finding a word in Gwich'in to describe things like commerce or the Department of Natural Resources.
Because I always thought our languages, you know, from people from ancient times, and now we're in a century that's pretty high tech.
In many cases, the terminology simply doesn't translate, so Hayden and Savage often decide to stick with an English word. And the translations go beyond just ballots. The state has to translate everything from stickers that read, I voted, to statements of cost associated with ballot questions, documents many voters might not read before they go to the polls. But Alan Hayden says that doesn't matter.
If we're going to do this, we shouldn't do it halfway. I think in the long run, we do need to have everything that, you know, every other voter would have in their language.
Alaska's Division of Elections was ordered by a U.S. District Court judge in September to provide all the translated material to outreach workers by the end of the week. For National Native News, I'm Emily Schwing in Fairbanks.
The Navajo Times is reporting that Chris Deschini gave a deposition in Navajo on Monday. The presidential candidate's ability to speak Navajo fluently is being challenged. Grievances against him are being decided in the tribal court system. The Office of Hearing and Appeals is expected to review the deposition this week. Navajo law requires candidates be fluent. Seattle City Councilors voted to recognize the second Monday of October, the federal Columbus Day holiday, as Indigenous Peoples Day. On Monday, the council approved a resolution to designate the day. Seattle is now in company with other cities and states across the country, which have already made similar moves. The National Endowment for the Arts recently honored its 2014 Heritage Fellows. Native American artist Yvonne Walker Keshick was one of them. Polly Dinetclaw has more.
Keshick began her quill work in her early 20s. As a shy young woman, she said she had difficulty talking to employers in order to secure a job. During President Kennedy's war on poverty, tribal elders were hired to help younger tribal members find employment. It was one of these elders that helped Keshick get work at a Native American arts and crafts co-op. Keshick decided she wanted to learn how to do quill work under one of the Native artists working there. Now more than decades later and several recognitions, Keshick is well known for her birch bark art pieces that are intricately designed with porcupine quills. Not only is Keshick a renowned artist, but a dedicated teacher. Keshick says she is passionate about teaching the next generation how to quill work.
Every culture has something to contribute to the lifestyle and art form of tribes. So I feel it's my responsibility to teach the best of our culture.
Some other Native American artists were also awarded the fellowship. The fellows are recognized for making major contributions to folk and traditional arts and their community. For National Native News, I'm Polly Dinetclaw.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
3.05 p.m. in Juneau, you're listening to KTOO. My first guest on the show today is Cheryl McRoberts, and she's going to be talking about the 20th Annual Bald Eagle Festival in Haines, but also be talking about the American Bald Eagle Foundation, and I'd like to welcome her on the show. Hi, Cheryl. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Doing good. All right. Let's talk a little bit about how the American Bald Eagle Foundation got started.
It got started clear back in 1982 when Dave Olerud had a vision that he wanted to create a Bald Eagle Foundation. He started in 1982 with the licensing, and it actually opened in 1994. The reason it took so long was one of the walls had collapsed and broke his back. But he did open it, and we've been open for 20 years in July.
All right, so this is the annual celebration of the peak of winter gathering for eagles. How many eagles usually show up for this?
Normally between 3,000 to 4,000 eagles show up.
Oh, that's a pretty good showing. All right. And let's talk a little bit about the festival itself. So this started 20 years ago.
Yes, it did.
Okay, and has it grown significantly since its initial inception?
Yes, it has.
All right. How much of a growth did you experience over the course of 20 years?
Well, the only thing that holds us back is motel rooms. But there's a no motel being built in town right now. So, it started off as a very small festival, but now we can host about 300 people.
All right, and what kind of events and guests are we expecting here for this year?
Well, this year we've confirmed that we have two eagles to release. They're being brought down by Bird TLC in Anchorage. We also have Doris Mager coming this year. She's an 88-year-old eagle fanatic, more or less. She actually lived in an eagle's nest for 7 days to raise money. We have Wayne Price coming, and he's going to be speaking about the canoes that they paddled all the way to Juneau from Haines, the dugout canoes. And we'll have Native dancers. I mean, there's so many things. It's expanded now from 3 days to a week.
Okay, and the dates are from the 10th of November till the 16th, is that right?
Yes, that's right, yep.
Okay, and there's also supposed to be a rather extensive photography workshop. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, we have William McRoberts. The workshop only hosts 12 guests. That way he can give more one-on-one attention to each person that's participating. The workshop will be for 3 days, and it's an all-inclusive pass. You'll take the bus up in the morning up to the Eagle Preserve and photograph all day. You'll have lunch up there and come back at night, and then we'll have Photoshop classes upstairs in our media room. And that lasts for 3 days.
All right, and let's talk a little bit about a little bit more about Doris Mager. What's she going to be doing at the festival?
She's going to be giving presentations with owls and hawks. and eagles. She's been taking care of eagles. She has her own nonprofit foundation called SOAR. So we're very thankful that she's coming. She'll be giving presentations. Her first presentation will be Thursday evening, the 13th, 14th.
Okay. Well, I'll take your word for it this far out.
The 13th.
All right. And what other exhibits do you expect to have for the festival?
Well, we have we've invited all the local artists and local authors to come and have all their work on display. Local meaning people from Haines. We also have a number of presentations that will be put on. Local birders, ornithologists. Again, Doris Mager. We'll have Anastasia Wiley talking about archaeological training in the Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve. Geology, ecology. There's just so much going on. It's all on our website at baldeagles.org. And the grand finale is the eagle release on Saturday, the 15th, where we'll go out and watch them release two eagles. There'll be a live auction where you can bid on the opportunity to release these eagles. And then we'll come back here Saturday night, and we have a banquet, prime rib and halibut, and a live auction.
All right, and what's the cost for admission for the festival?
You can buy a 1-day, 3-day, 5-day, or 7-day pass. Anywhere from $50 to $750, depending on what you'd like to do.
All right, and how does one become a member of the American Bald Eagle Foundation?
We have applications online, or you can call in, and I can mail you one. I can take it over the phone. Individual memberships are $35. Family memberships are $50, which gets you into the Bald Eagle Foundation for the entire year.
All right. And was there a raptor sort of thing that was going on?
Yes, we have. You can sponsor each one of our birds. We have 11 birds. After tomorrow, we'll have 12. We're getting a new eagle in. And you can sponsor the eagle. You'll get a letter from the eagle, from the bird that you sponsor, along with photographs and information on how your particular bird is doing. And that would be $50 for the entire year, or $1,000 if you'd like to get a lifetime membership. You can also adopt an eagle's nest.
Okay, and that's all done through the website?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
All right.
If you don't have internet, you can call in at any time, and I can mail you a package.
Okay, and we already went over the website. It's not even www. It's just baldeagles.org, and that gets you to your website.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and the phone number, if anybody wants to call to get any additional information or possibly sponsor a raptor?
It's 907-766-3094.
All right, Cheryl McRoberts, thank you very much for being our first guest on the show today, and we may be talking to you a little bit closer to the actual festival date since it's not till November 10th when it starts.
Well, thank you.
All right, thanks for being our first guest on the show today.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, and... Well, let's see, I was looking for songs, and about the only one that really fits is Steve Miller Band's Fly Like an Eagle, so here it is.
Slipping, slipping, slipping into on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future.
Programming on KTOO is provided by Maria Gladyshevsky, area-wide candidate for the CBJ Assembly, paid for by Maria for Assembly, Bruce Botello, and Cheryl Eldemar, co-chairs.
Welcome back to a Juneau Afternoon. My next guest is Dave Pusich, and he's here to talk about the City and Borough of Juneau adult and youth sports programs, and I'd like to welcome him to the show today. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Pretty good. Thanks, Ken. Thanks for having me.
Okay, and let's talk about what's coming up for adults and for youth.
Well, on the adult side of things, right now we're in the midst of our men's and women's volleyball program, and we're into the 6 week of league play. So we'll continue that through the end of the month, and then we'll jump into our end of season tournament, double elimination tournament, and that'll run November 1st through November 6th, and that'll wrap up the men's and women's volleyball season. Right now, this year, we have 51 teams with about 420 participants taking part, so it's pretty
good. Wow, that's pretty extensive.
So, yeah, it's one of our stronger programs and one of our larger ones, so we're trying to stay on that trend as long as we can. So,
is that one of the reasons why adult basketball was pulled, is because the volleyball is doing so exceptionally well?
Not really. It's just it was one of our smaller programs, so that was the one they chose, so it was kind of out of our hands. So yeah.
Okay, can people still get involved in adult volleyball?
Yep, actually, the deadline to sign up to add new players to the team's rosters is this Friday. So if people are looking for teams, or they can get their name onto a waiting list down at the office, and then we'll pass that on to the managers, and then they can contact those players to come into the office to sign up. And it's $45 a player fee, and then they'll be good to go. So,
well, that's pretty cheap to get involved in a sporting event around here.
Yeah. And then the other program we have is it's co-ed volleyball, and that kicks off in the spring. So registration for that begins first week of January, and then league play will run February through mid-April. And then it's kind of the same format as men's and women's. We'll wrap up with the end-of-season tournament and all that as well. So
is there a 50-50 composition for the co-ed teams? Or, I mean, you can't have, like, hey, I'm a co-ed team and there's just one woman on the team.
Right. You got to have at least one You can play with like a 4-1 ratio or a 3-1 ratio, but you got to have at least one gender on there at all times. The requirement is 2-2. That's the minimum, but if the other team agrees, then they'll allow, just so a game can happen, they'll allow like a 3-1 ratio. So yeah, it's everybody wants to play, so we try to accommodate the rules just so that happens. So
all right.
So yeah, on the youth sports side of things, we're just gearing off for our indoor soccer season. Actual practices started up last Saturday, and then we'll have games kicking off this Saturday for our first games of the season for indoor. And just like the mention, we have 42 teams this year, we got 50 more players than last year, so it's a pretty huge increase.
Are they bracketed by age at all, or
yep,
do we? Okay.
We got 5-6-year-old division, and then 7-8-year-old division, and then 9-10, and then we have a 11-14 combined division, and it's all co-ed. So yeah, it's pretty exciting to see the numbers kind of go up in that indoor, and actually outdoor season went up as well. So we're pretty excited about that. So the season will kick off for games this Saturday and then run through December 6th. That'll wrap up the season for indoor. And like I say, we got 42 teams this year, and I'd just like to say thanks to all those coaches out there that stepped up and took on a team and volunteered to help out with the program, because we couldn't do it without the coaches. So thanks, coaches, for helping out there. That's awesome. So what else we got going on for youth? Basketball will start up in January. That season will run January 17th through March 7th. And that's for the same age groups, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11 to 14 on that season. So, and last year we had about 250 players, about 20-something teams in that program. So, and then let's see, we got also starting this week is our Start Smart program, the sport development program. It's a program for 3 to 4-year-olds, and they get to work one-on-one with their parent and work on various skill-building activities. There's 4 different stations, and they work on throwing, kicking, batting, catching, and then each week, it's a 6-week program. Each week it gets a little more difficult for the kid, but it's a safe environment. It builds self-confidence and self-esteem for the kids, and it's another program that fills up quite quickly, so we're pretty happy about that as well.
Okay, and what's coming up for this next year, spring through summer?
For the summer, we'll have our outdoor season again. We finished that up first part of September. That season wrapped up, and that season runs typically will start up early July on that, and then the season will run July 11th through September 5th, and we have about almost 400 players in the outdoor season. And once again, we'll need volunteer coaches for that again. So if there's somebody out there that's really interested in helping out or want to do some volunteer work, we're always looking for coaches to help out with the program and referees as well. We can always use a few more referees for the sports program as well, both on the adult and youth side of things. Just a few other things that I wanted to mention while I'm here. We're taking rentals at Mount Jumbo Gymnasium. So if people are interested in running a birthday party or reserving the gym just for some kind of activity, we are taking reservations for that. It's $35 an hour and open on Saturdays or during the week in the evening time. We have availability. So they can just contact our office and we can check the availability on that and hook them up with a rental, or we get a lot of birthday parties down there, so it's a pretty popular spot for that.
Well, if you got a big wedding or wedding reception too,
possibly, yeah, we could make something work.
That's
there.
Not bad for $35 an hour.
So yeah, we're this week's pretty busy with all the youth stuff kicking off and getting ready for that season to start up for indoor and Start Smart. So.
Well, the Parks and Recreation Department does a really good job of keeping the youth and everything busy. That's great that you've got all these indoor programs for the wintertime.
Yep, got to keep them busy and keep them active. That's the key, and get them out there and burn off some of that energy. So we're happy to provide that. And let's see, picnic shelters, those are done for the year. And then, so yeah, we wrapped up renting shelters middle of September. So those are on a first-come, first-use basis right now for the picnic shelters. So yeah, other than that, those are kind of the highlights of the youth and adult sports programs. Like I say, we're gearing up for indoor games this weekend. I think we got most of the games covered and ready to roll for the referees and everything. So we're, I think we're ready to kick off the season. I think the kids are excited as well. So should be fun. I'm looking forward to it, and hopefully it's a good season.
All right, Dave Pusick, thank you very much for being our guest on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And now I want to kind of put on the astronomy hat for a minute here, because we supposedly have a total lunar eclipse coming up tonight. And 2 years ago, when we had another total lunar eclipse that was visible here in Juneau, it started out clouded out, kind of like what it's doing today. But by the near end of totality, it was spectacular from the north end of Douglas Island. I know, because I stayed up to do photography of it. Tonight's eclipse is going to start out at 1:15 a.m. Juneau time, and it's going to end at 4:34 a.m. The moon will enter totality. That's where it passes between, well, the Earth passes between the sun and the moon. So we enter totality at about 2:25 a.m. Maximum totality is going to be at 2:54 a.m. And totality will end at 3:24 a.m. Then we start coming out of that. So we'll actually start getting like a shiny sliver that appears on the side of the moon as it comes out of the shadow of the Earth. And moonrise today is going to be at 5:56 p.m. Moonset is going to be at 7:41 in the morning, tomorrow morning. And the moon should be high in the western sky when the eclipse starts. It's going to be safe to watch, so you'll be able to watch it without any kind of glasses or filters, which unfortunately we will have to have for the partial solar eclipse that's coming up later in the month. And if we do get clouded out, you'll still be able to catch it online. If you go to space.com, they'll be carrying it live, or here's the site I like to use. It's the Live Online Observatory. It's called SLOO. So you'd actually go to live.slooh.com, and they will be carrying that through a series of telescopes, so you'll be able to watch it live online. But anyways, the eclipse starts at 1:15 in the morning. No, a lot of people aren't going to be up that late to try and take this in. And it's going to end, again, come completely out of totality, and the eclipse will end at 4:34 a.m. And moonset's going to be at 7:41 tomorrow morning. So high up in the western sky when the eclipse starts. Hopefully some of these clouds get out of here. Tonight's forecast is for mostly cloudy with scattered rain showers diminishing late, areas of fog late with lows in the mid-30s, and light winds becoming southeasterly at 10 miles an hour late tomorrow. Isolated rain showers in the morning, so I'm hoping we get some cloud-free spots where we can actually see the eclipse. Then partly cloudy with highs in the mid-40s and southeast winds at 10 miles an hour. So that was it for the astronomical update. Hopefully we've got a good shot at seeing the eclipse, but anybody that's got the internet, a very good chance you're going to be able to see it online. So let's hope for a little bit of cloud-free sky here in the morning, so we'll all be able to catch a glimpse of it live. And right now, here is Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 7th of October, 2014. It's the birthday of William Zinsser, born New York City, 1922, journalist, author, teacher of writing, written about travel and jazz and baseball. His best-known work is probably On Writing Well, in which he advocates for a clean, spare style. Clutter is the disease of American writing, he wrote. We are a society strangling in unnecessary words, circular constructions, pompous frills, and meaningless jargon. It's the birthday of Thomas Keneally, born in Sydney, Australia, 1935, decided to become a priest, studied for 7 years, eventually decided he wasn't cut out for it, and left the seminary before his ordination. Written 10 books of nonfiction, many novels, best known as the author of Schindler's Ark, 1982, the book on which the movie Schindler's List was based. The story of an opportunistic, alcoholic, womanizing German businessman, Oskar Schindler, who rescued hundreds of Jews from the concentration camps. Keneally said, "Stories of fallen people who stand out against the conditions that their betters succumb to are always fascinating. It was one of those times in history when saints are no good to you, and only scoundrels who are pragmatic can save souls." It's the birthday of the Danish physicist Niels Bohr, born in Copenhagen, 1885, who theorized that atoms were composed of a small, dense nucleus orbited by electrons, and came up with the idea of complementarity, that things like light or electrons can have a dual nature. And it was on this day in San Francisco, 1955, Allen Ginsberg read his poem Howl at the Six Gallery, a reading to promote the art gallery as organized by the poet Kenneth Rexroth. Gary Snyder was there and Jack Kerouac. Ginsberg was the second to the last to read. He started at about 11 o'clock at night. He was 29 years old. He'd never taken part in a poetry reading before. Started off very quietly, but as he read, he found his rhythm, took a deep breath before each of the long lines in the poem, and then said each line in one breath. Read the whole thing, and the audience went wild. Here's a poem for today by Ron Kirchy entitled Negative Space. My dad taught me to pack, lay out everything, put back half, roll things that roll, wrinkle-prone things on top of cotton things, then pants, waist to hem, nooks and crannies for socks, belts around the sides like snakes, plastic over that, add shoes, wear heavy stuff on the plane. We started when I was little. I'd roll up socks, then he'd pretend to put me in the suitcase and we'd laugh. Some guys bond with their dads shooting hoops or talking about Chevrolets. We did it over luggage. By the time I was 12, if he was busy, I'd pack for him. Mom tried but didn't have the knack. He'd get somewhere, open his suitcase, and text me, "Perfect." That one word from him meant a lot. The funeral was terrible. Him laid out in that big carton, and me crying and thinking, "Look at all that wasted space." A poem, Negative Space, by Ron Kirchy from his collection Sex World, published by Red Hen Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees now available 100% online at online.asu.edu, and by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that's been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
3:33 p.m. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau. This is a Juneau afternoon. I'm Ken Fix. I'm your host for today. And my next guest is Deborah Corker. She's going to be talking with us about this Saturday's Alaska Health Fair at the Nugget Mall. Deborah, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ken. I'm glad to be here today.
And, okay, let's talk about this because a lot of people ignore their health care stuff. And this is a good way to get in and get some things tested and, you know, get some results back. So let's talk about that.
Absolutely. Alaska Health Fair has been doing health fairs in Juneau probably 20 years or more and 35 years in the state of Alaska. And the whole goal of our health fair is so that you as the individual can come in and get some key pieces of information about your health and wellness and take that to task and move on from there. We have about 15 local educators and healthcare providers who are going to be there with exhibits, and then we have, as always, our low-cost blood tests, which are of the highest quality and are basically the things your doctor would test you for if they had some concerns or if they were just, you know, doing a wellness check in some situations. And I don't know how much detail you want, Ken. Do you want a list of the tests, or what can I do for you?
Well, sure. What's covered in the blood test? I'm sure that they're going to cover cholesterol. That's a big one.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so that's included in the test.
We have a what we call a chemistry hematology profile, which is a $45 test, and it has 27 different individual tests included in that one package that we do. Within that, you mentioned cholesterol. We have a lipid profile. So that has all five of the markers for cholesterol, your LD, your cholesterol, your triglycerides, your HDL, which is your good cholesterol, and your LDL, which is your bad cholesterol. So you get all of those in that package. In that package also is a comprehensive metabolic panel, which tells you kidney functions, your glucose level, how your kidney, liver, and those kinds of things are functioning with your protein levels, checks your calcium, checks your BRN, which is a real key for kidney function and liver function, tests for tissue and liver disease, just kind of a little bit of, as it says, a comprehensive metabolic panel. Also, the last component in this is what the technical term is a hemogram with platelets, and this is checking your blood count, your white cells, your red cells, your platelets, to see if you have anemia, to see if there's any issues with your blood and clotting. So for $45, you get all of those in just that one package in that chemistry hematology profile.
All right. And there's a few other tests that are going to be available. Let's talk about those.
Okay. You can get a TSH, which is a thyroid screening. It just tests your thyroid function. And I just have to put this out there. Many people think, oh, that's a female issue. But all of us have a thyroid. All of us have our thyroid controlling our metabolism, so it's relevant for everybody. That's $30. We have a PSA, which is a prostate screening test. And we've probably all heard the great discussions about PSAs and screening. That is $25, and that is one portion when a man is taking care of his health and checking his prostate and as he ages. It's just one small component of making sure you're taking care of that whole picture. There are other things involved that we can't do at a fair, but this is one piece of the puzzle when you're worried about that issue or you're checking it out. We also have a vitamin D screening, and I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, there were several conferences in Juneau about vitamin D and how important it is and how it affects us, our depression, our mood, our bones, all of those things. So we have a vitamin D screening, which is $50. We also have an A1C screening. Now, for many years, the A1C was a test that people who were diabetic got every 6 to 8 weeks, and it checked their blood sugars over a period of time, that 6 or 8 week period of time. And it's a non-fasting blood test, glucose test. That has now become a screening test because so many of us in this country are falling into diabetes, finding we are more and more incidence of diabetes, and A1C is turning out to be a real nice screening test. That is a non-fasting test, but it can be done if you've fasted for that big panel that I talked about earlier. It will give you the differences between how your blood sugar looks over an 8 week period of time versus the fasting. And that's a real good gauge. If there are any issues about diabetes or that in your family history, that gives you a good test to check against. And just because we've had so many people ask us, we are now also able to offer blood typing. So if you don't know your blood type and that's something you'd like to know and have in your records, we can do that for you too for $20.
All right. Surprised that they don't include that in that full kind of range blood test typing.
It's a different process at the lab. They were kind of surprised we even asked, because I guess where it goes in the whole works is someplace different than that other panel. But as I said, the lab that works with us, which is PAML, which is probably the second or third largest referral laboratory in the country, was more than happy to say, if that's going to help Alaskans be healthier, then we're happy to give you the opportunity to offer that at health fairs.
Well, it's not only important to know your blood type, but it's important for somebody else that knows you to know your blood type.
Exactly. Exactly.
There may be an instance where you can't tell somebody what blood type you are, but somebody else that knows you
yes.
has to know that.
Yes, yes. It's one of those little pieces of information you think we all should know, but most of us don't. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, and we did briefly mention about fasting. So let's go over which tests would you actually have to abstain from eating and or drinking before you go ahead and do the tests.
Okay. The only test that requires a fasting is the chemistry hematology profile.
That so that 45, big long one. Panel. Okay.
Yeah, and the key is 10 hours minimum, no food, no caffeine. Like, don't get up in the morning and have your coffee, because your body will start working on that caffeine immediately. But drink lots of water. That helps keep your blood flowing. That keeps your veins open. Makes it a lot easier for you to give that little donation of blood that's needed to test it.
Okay, yeah, I know my wife went in for a panel to have a checkup, and she said, I think they took 16 tubes of blood.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm sure she meant like six, but
yeah.
You know, it kind of felt like 16. So
It can. Well, and we promise we'll stick you once, and we'll take the couple, two or three tubes that we need, and we'll be done. We have some of the best phlebotomists in the area who volunteer for the health fair.
Oh yeah, it's kind of sometimes it's tough to get into veins, and I mean I've actually had them use the little butterfly one in your hand to get blood out. So I mean, that does be just a smidge painful at times, but if you've got very good phlebotomists, at least they don't go on a fishing expedition in your veins. That's always the worst thing to happen.
It is indeed. I'm with you all the way on that.
All right, Deborah, and it says bring a stamp for your blood test results. So are people, we're going to have to bring stamps with us in order to have them mailed?
Well, the reason we ask for that is because we do so many blood tests across the state, we are spending about $10,000 a year in postage.
Wow.
So for you to come in, fill out your requisition form, fill out your envelope, which you're going to get your results in, you know, the 43 cents you place on that stamp is a small step for you, but it adds up to a huge amount for us.
Seems to me that somebody could make out pretty good by selling stamps there.
They probably
you need a
could.
Guy at a table with a bunch of first-class stamps, you know.
Yep. It's and, you know, it's one of the things, because we're a nonprofit, we have to fundraise and find the money for absolutely everything we do. And we offer these blood tests virtually at cost, and so it's all about providing the service, and so little things like stamps on envelopes and, you know, a $5 donation at the fair, that's what keeps us going.
All right, Deborah, and let's remind everybody when and where the Alaska Health Fair will be taking place.
Okay. It is this Saturday, October 11th. It will be at the Nugget Mall from 9 to 1 p.m., and we would love everyone in the Juneau community to come down and join us.
All right, and anybody that wants any more information, what number would they call, and what's the website address?
The website is www.alaskahealthfair.org, all run together, no spaces. And they can call 723-5100 if you need more information.
All right, Deborah Corker, thank you very much for being our guest on the show, and I wish you everybody the success for the Alaska Health Fair. It's a great opportunity to get some important tests run and know a little bit more about yourself, and hopefully somebody that's close to you knows a little bit more about you, especially your blood type.
Very good. Thanks, Ken.
Okay, thanks again.
All right.
And, everybody in the oldies community, we had a death in the oldies sort of era here. Paul Revere of the 1960s band Paul Revere and the Raiders died on Saturday from cancer. He was 76 years old, and I wanted to do something just a little bit to honor him, so I'm going to play this song by Paul Revere and the Raiders called Kicks. Enjoy.
thought you found the answer on that magic carpet ride last night. But when you wake up in the morning, the world still gets you uptight. Well, there's nothing better you ain't tried to fill the emptiness inside. When you come back down, girl, still ain't feeling right. Don't it seem like it just keeps getting harder to find, and all your gifts ain't bringing you peace of mind? Before you find out it's too late, girl, you better get straight. No, but not with kicks. You just need help, girl. Well, you think you're gonna find yourself a little piece of paradise, but it ain't happened yet. So, girl, you better think twice. Don't you see, no matter what you do, you'll never run away from you. And if you keep on running, you'll have to pay the price. And don't it seem like harder to find, and all your kids ain't bringing you peace of mind? Before you find out it's too late, girl, you better get straight. No, you don't need kids to help you face the world each day. That road goes nowhere. I'm gonna help you find yourself another way.
Okay, that was Paul Revere and the Raiders with Kicks. And again, sad to see him go, but he just passed away on Saturday at age 76. Now, Barbara Jo Mayer is not here today, but she did send a couple of replacements to talk, and I'm glad to have both of them here in the studio. It's Virginia Roldan, who's the stage manager for The Tale of a West Texas Marsupial Girl. And I've also got Rebecca Hassler here in the studio with me, and she is the marsupial girl. So it's great to have both of you in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Who came up with this idea for the play?
I think Barb, our director, just kind of found it and thought it would be a good idea to put on, because it's a show, and it actually revolves around a lot about
the
bullying.
The main theme of the show is bullying, and Barb found the script, and she thought that the story was really good, and she loved the way it was told, and it's really poetic, and so she thought it would be a good choice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how much preparation did you need for doing this? I mean, how long have you been rehearsing at this and working on it?
We've been rehearsing since, I would say, about 2-3 weeks ago, would you say? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. 2 or 3 weeks. We've been rehearsing for 2 or 3 weeks. We open in 2 weeks on October 30th, so we'll have had about a 5-week rehearsal run. So,
all right, and Virginia, just a little bit of background on this play. tell everybody a little bit about what it is. It's rather quirky and unusual, isn't it?
It's very quirky and unusual. So what happens is there's a girl, and she's born with a pouch, and so.
Like a kangaroo pouch.
Like a kangaroo pouch. And hence why she's named Marsupial Girl. And so everyone in her whole town thinks it's super strange and super weird. And so they all kind of pick on her in their own way. And there's really only like one or two people that actually are on her side and are like, hey, it's not that weird. Don't worry about it. And so this is basically her story about how she grows up in this town where she's very different from everyone else.
Okay, and just a little bit more about the intricacies of the play. She's ostracized by all of her peers and whatever.
Well, the show starts when she's 5 years old, and so, of course, kids at that age just find they – I mean, yeah, it's really about her going through school and going through adolescence with other kids thinking she's different and excluding her. And she really only has one friend who halfway through the show gets involved with the girls who are bullying her. So then she sort of loses that friend too. And really the only person who is on her side 100% throughout the entire show is her mom. And so, I mean, if you can imagine growing up like that, it would just be horrible. And that's what the show is about.
Well, it's just another way of being different.
Yeah.
And but how does everybody know she's got a pouch unless she told them?
Well, it's actually, it's costume-wise, the pouch is in the front. It's like a little dress with like a pouch in the front. So people can, like, they can see it. So, yeah.
Okay, so we're using that a little bit metaphorically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, Virginia, let's talk a little bit about the stage production itself and the music that's involved.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the music. Well, so far right now, most of it is just chanting because we're still working on trying to pick out notes and find accompaniment for it because the CD we have is mainly just wind sounds.
Wind sounds?
The yes. CD we have is mainly like guitar backing and it has some funky
so
wind
sounds.
So there's
really not a lot of like pitches and notes for us to pick up on, and it's not really a rehearsal CD, so...
But we do have the sheet music, so what we're doing right now is the kids, you can play piano, or we're working with the choir teacher, mm-hmm. we're learning the melodies on the piano. And
figuring that out, and so we're getting the music worked into there, and one of the other cast members, his name is Jacob Riddle, and he's actually working on making his own background music kind of to fit with the play and to fit in with all of the areas and the songs that need music.
Yeah.
All right, and how many set changes are there in the course of the play?
There's not really any big set changes. It's mainly just like some benches get moved to different arrangements or a table gets moved to like the other side of the stage. But for the most part, it's a really simple set with like a backdrop for the main set.
Okay. And about how long is the play going to run?
I believe it's about an hour at the most.
I think last time I asked Barb, she said it was about 75 minutes long. So
yeah.
That's inclusive of the music once you get that put in?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But when I timed it the first time, it was about an hour and like
and then the
10
music,
minutes or
the
something.
Music will
so
add.
Plus the music will add a lot because we were just saying the words.
Okay. And Rebecca, how many other people are in the cast, and who's playing what parts? Do you know?
How many other people are in the cast? Well, Virginia has a list right here.
All right, Virginia's got it on paper. Okay.
She can remember in a second. She can look at this. But as far as who's playing what parts, Jacob Riddle, who we mentioned earlier, is playing Dr. Pouch, which is quite the name. But he's pretty much, he's like a guide for Marsupial Girl. He's the only other person beside her mom that is, like, with her throughout the whole show. And Aaron Bueller and Suzanne Nayera are playing Pearl and Libby, who are the main girls who bully Marsupial Girl. And Madison Smith is playing Sue, her best friend. We have a great ensemble, a really talented ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there are 20 kids in the cast.
20 altogether.
20 altogether.
All right. And when do you expect to be putting this on for the first time?
Our first show is October 30th, which is a Thursday, and at 7 p.m. And then our next two shows are on November 1st, which is Saturday at 2 and 7.
And all tickets are $10 at the door.
That's what I was going to ask next, was how much does it cost to get in? Okay. That's a fairly reasonable price to go and see a play. So, is there anything else that either of you would like to add about the play?
It's a great show.
Yeah.
All right,
like
a great
so
show,
far.
And everybody should go. All right. Well, it's been a pleasure having both of you. Tell Barbara Jo that wish she could have been here, but she isn't. So, I got both of you, Virginia Roldan and Rebecca Hassler. Thank you very much for being our guests on the show today.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
All right, and that's the other thing about bullying. Mean people suck, so let's do what we can to bring this to light and stop bullying all around.
It's a great children's show. It's
great for kids. Kids, bring to see the show.
Oh, Rebecca said it's a great children's show. Okay, great. Oh, so suitable for all ages, but mm-hmm. still has the anti-bullying theme, I hope, by the end. So.
Yes.
All right, great. Again, thanks both of you for being our guests on the show.
No problem. Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah. All right.
This is Bird Note. Nimble notes ring out from a tangle of vines in the southern U.S. On the western high plains, a raspy scream. A flute-like song spirals upward in the cool evening of a northern forest. The Swainson's thrush, the Swainson's hawk, and the Swainson's warbler, birds that carry the name of ornithologist, author, and illustrator William John Swainson. Born in England in October 1789, Swainson made his name as a zoological illustrator. After one trip to Brazil, he described himself as a bee loaded with honey, bringing home a collection of over 20,000 insects, 1,200 species of plants, drawings of 120 species of fish, and about 760 bird skins. Swainson's career was sporadic, though, so in 1841 he emigrated to New Zealand in search of better fortunes. He remained a controversial figure, even though John James Audubon called him an excellent and learned author. And it was Audubon himself who was responsible for christening the Swainson's Swamp Warbler. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
I'm Laurie Morton, Executive Director of the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, but all year long, amazing people working in shelters and sexual assault programs throughout our state are there to help, providing support, counseling, legal advocacy, and more. If you or someone you love needs help, reach out. There is help and there is hope. Asking for help changes everything. Respect is always the right choice.
It don't matter to me if you really feel that. Need some time to be free, time to go out searching for yourself, hope you to find time to go to find. It don't matter to me if you take up with someone who's better than me, 'cause you're happy. To me, if your searching brings you back together with me, 'cause there'll always be a empty room waiting for you. An open heart waiting for you. Time is on my
That was a little bit from Bread and It Don't Matter to Me. Well, tonight's forecast, I'll repeat it again, is mostly cloudy with scattered rain showers in the evening, areas of fog late with lows 32 to 38, southwest winds at 10 miles an hour becoming light in the evening. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, hopefully not too cloudy for the eclipse tomorrow. Areas of fog in the morning with highs around 46. Light winds becoming east at 10 miles an hour in the afternoon tomorrow night. Rain likely with lows in the upper 30s and southeast winds at 10 to 15. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable Digital Channel 871, KRNN is on Channel 872, and KXLL can be found on 873. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. I'm Ken Fix. I've been your host for a Juneau afternoon today. Tomorrow's host is going to be Shauna Strasser. No, wait a minute. It's Joan Partis is going to be the host tomorrow. Everybody have a great day. Hopefully we can see the eclipse. And All Things Considered is coming right up.
For the Turkish people, in the beginning, they don't care. Someone in the airport says, good luck in jihad in Syria.
Turkey has now cracked down on the flow of jihadists, but it isn't intervening in the fight on its doorstep.
For Tuesday, October 7th, this is All Things Considered.
I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Coming up, the battle for the Syrian Kurdish town of Kobani. It's on the border with Turkey, whose forces are nearby but staying out.
Also, voters in Colorado and Oregon decide on whether to require labels for genetically modified food.
In our series on millennials, we'll pay attention to those who are overlooked, the undereducated and underemployed.
I struggle in making ends meet at the end of the month, and I usually make it by the skin of my teeth.
And A Chosen Exile, the history of African Americans passing for white.